Welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
You hear that, Ern? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one source for news, theories, discussion and interviews with people from the Potter books and films. I know a small amount myself, having written the books. My name is J.K. Rowling. I am now happy to introduce your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
And Frank.
Welcome to Pottercast 167. We've got a great live show for you this week. Oh, no.
Yay, live show.
Nah, just kidding.
I lied.
Uh-oh.
Got you all worried. No, we are
what,
done.
What, people don't like our live shows?
They love the live shows, but we've been doing them since, like, August, so I think...
Oh my god,
I
really?
I think it's time. Yeah. Yeah. We gotta put the whole tour up.
We should do, like a Halloween episode.
Okay.
We should.
What will be on this Halloween episode?
We'll all dress in costumes, and it'll be hilarious.
Yeah, we'll all be in costumes, and everybody will have to guess what we're wearing.
Perfect. Aww. Good. Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Well,
I'll be
welcome,
Hammer.
Pottercast 167. Melissa, I'm here with John, Frack, and Sue. We have a lot of great fun for you this week. A whole new canon conundrums.
Oh, very fun conundrums.
Have lots and lots of news and more. All right. Well, this week, let's just get into it, Sue. What's happening in the Harry Potter world? Lots and lots of stuff.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we've done some. Live news, and we have a lot of news for you guys from the live show.
Yeah.
So, let's start with our cast, because our cast has been very busy since we don't have a movie right now. And Emma Watson, for example, has said that she is going to go to university post Deathly Hallows. She's not going to focus on her film career. She's going to go to university, and possibly here in the United States.
Nuh-uh, really?
Yeah, huh? Yes.
Hasn't Harvard been, like, saying, oh, we think she's coming here?
Yeah.
Come to USC.
Yeah, okay, John.
Yeah, it's a great school.
Yeah.
What does she want to study? Do we know?
I think she wanted to do, like, English literature and literature, you know, I mean, or maybe arts, I don't know, but it's...
art?
Kind of bets down on Yale.
Yeah.
I'm gonna pre-bet for Yale.
She enjoys
Yale
roaring.
Not only a great, you know, it's not only known for, well, everything, the way Yale is, but it has a world-renowned... dramatic arts.
Wait, what school?
Harvard does too, but Yale. Yale's really known for their dramatic arts stuff, and so if she wants to study acting more while she's doing her English literature and everything else she wants to study, then I'm going to bet on Yale.
That would be a good fit for her, because, I mean, but she did really well with her, you know, her owls, like in real life, like Hermione. She's very, very smart with her academics, so she could get in, I think.
She could get in anywhere, probably regardless of the fact that she's Emma Watson, you know?
Well, she wants to go to a party school.
John.
Come on.
Isn't this the funny, like, thing that all the schools will start doing now? It'll be the rumor going into next year until a week before the school starts or whatever. Oh, I heard Emma Watson's coming here. Every year when seniors are going to check out schools, you hear some rumor about, like, you know, I don't know, last year or a couple of years ago, there was a rumor that the Olsen twins were going to Vassar
or
something.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. The Olsen twins.
You know? Like, when I went to, I'm the same age as Chelsea Clinton, and Chelsea Clinton's father went to Georgetown, so when I got there before the first year, the big rumor was that, oh, Chelsea Clinton's coming here, and then she didn't, you know, so, it's I don't know, it's amusing.
It is.
Chelsea Clinton ended up going to a party school.
John.
She didn't? Where'd she go?
I forgot.
Yeah. Well, she didn't go to Ohio State. Ohio State's a great academic school, but we have a lot of fun, too. Just saying. Okay, moving on. Daniel Radcliffe, as you might have heard, is in the little play known as Equus, and it has now formally opened in on Broadway in New York City. And
It's opened?
It is open now. It's running until February.
Nice.
So if you want to go see him, the tickets are still available, but a lot of the performances have actually sold out, so...
We should try to go in November.
Well, we don't have a movie to see.
We don't have a movie to see. I mean, we have, book parties to
Well,
go
we
to,
do.
But...
I'll tell you, we do have one movie to see in November. The We Are Wizards is getting a run in a New York theater.
Is it in November?
Yeah, they're getting a theatrical release by Cinema Village in New York City.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. And we're going to plan an event, some sort of event around it, also to do with the book and everything else. So, should be fun.
Very what book?
Nice.
Yeah, which
Beetle the Bard?
No, my book, not Beetle the Bard.
Oh, John, you ruined it by saying Beetle in the Bard.
Boo.
Aw.
No, my Boo. Book. Harry of History.
I can't wait for it. But we're going to talk about that more later. But I do want to mention that our friend, the ice cream man, Mr. Rupert Grint, is in London right now, and he's filming a new movie called Wild Target. And we have lots of pictures of that, from courtesy of our friends.
Wild Target?
Grint.net. Wild Target.
I bought an ice cream truck.
You what?
I bought an ice cream truck.
Yeah,
John,
cool.
No, this is not time for your Rupert Grint impression, okay? Never the time for your Rupert Grint impression.
I really like sweets.
Rupert
Grint,
it's his
same
birthday.
Here. Oh, yeah.
Okay,
I do
we
have
like,
something
pretty cool. We are all ADD this week.
Somebody, so what bad. Is happening?
Okay, John, I have something for you. You would like. You will like John, especially.
What are we doing?
You know how you What's like happening? The parts of Goblet of Fire when your buddy Tom Felton was leaping out of trees? Guess what he's doing now? He's going to be jumping out of helicopters and planes and diving with sharks and
he's
riding ostriches.
James Bond.
Yes, he is. No.
He's riding an ostrich?
Yeah, he's a guest on a reality show in the UK called, seriously, Jack Osborne's Reality Celebrity Adrenaline Junkie Show.
Wait, is this like Jack Osborne, like Ozzy Osborne's son?
I don't know. I don't know who Jack
I think
Osborne
probably
is.
Probably the only Osborne named Jack.
I don't know. Anyway, but it's like a celebrity reality show, like, you know, the islands and stuff. So what he's doing, and he's actually gone to Africa where he's going to dive with sharks and do all this. He's going to do aerial acrobatics on a stunt glider.
Whoa. That's really cool.
Crazy.
I don't know. I just thought it was funny.
I couldn't do that.
Who is he competing against?
Well, I don't know that he's... I don't know how it works. Daniel, I've never seen the show.
It is Jack Osborne.
Could you imagine
it
if it was
the
all
Aussies.
Harry Potter actors?
It is the Osbournes. That's Jack Osborne, nice. That guy. Yeah.
Oh.
Can you imagine if it was all Harry Potter actors, though, competing, like, on ostriches and stuff?
Ostrich
like, races? Ostrich? I don't understand.
I'm a Harry Potter star. Get me out of here.
It would just be too funny. It is funny. But, I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, what do you say to your bosses? Oh, by the way, you know, just so you know, I'm going to go fling myself out of a plane and swim with sharks and, you know, I'll be back for the next
movie.
Who's
Tom Felton's boss?
You know, that's a, you know, Sue, it's a really good point because they have, like, in the early days, at least I know, they had specific clauses that they couldn't do certain things that would endanger their, that could potentially, like, have them break a leg, you know?
Aww.
Because, well,
like getting their haircut.
Yeah, I mean, getting their haircut, dyeing their hair, riding motorcycle, you know, stuff. I don't know what's accurate. You know, I don't really know. But
hard drugs.
Yes, I'm sure, John. Drugs. I mean, come on.
But you know, seriously, well, I mean, and his role. I mean, Draco's role. I mean, in this movie. I mean, that's already filmed. But I mean, in movie 7 too. I mean, Draco's not exactly, you know, not a player. You know, so I just.
Well, it's not like they're gonna say, "Oh, we're done with you now, Tom. You can go jump out of helicopters now."
Well.
Surely.
Maybe
really have equal
it's all CG.
For them regardless of,
oh, well,
of
sure. I mean, well, obviously, but I just thought it was like, whoa. It's just, for me, it just seemed like very un... I mean, you hear him doing fishing. Okay, that's kind of sedate. It's kind of safe. Not too dangerous.
He's hardcore. You can't tell this guy what he can and can't do. He's 21 years old or something, isn't he?
Absolutely, he can do whatever. And I think it's, you know, more power to him and enjoy it. But it just, I was like, wow. It's really, you know, different. Anyway,
I mean,
that's...
riding an ostrich is nothing to sneeze at.
Spite those feathers,
John.
Right, John?
When was the next time that you remember that you rode an ostrich?
I tell you the story, but we're doing the news right now, so I have to wait until the wrap-up.
Okay, all right, anyway. That was a nice date.
Our Miss Jo has been in the news. She
really, that's a shock.
Jo has been in the news. She was honored by the City of Edinburgh, Scotland. She got some... Freedom of the City Award or something, and so congratulations to her for that. And she also, it comes out, the writer for the Doctor Who series, which I know is very popular. It's showing here in the United States now, but it's a big UK show. And they had considered having her as be a guest on the show that, you know, and I just...
What was that all about? I read about that in the paper.
Yeah, it's
so stupid. It was, you know, it's again the way it gets spun in the press, which is one of these things that tweaks both Sue and my noses. Is that she said they wanted to have her on an episode, and David Tennant was like, no, that sounds like a spoof. And then I heard that she actually said no, she turned it down. And all of a sudden, it's like Doctor Who, you know, spurns.
Well, no,
J.K. Rowling.
Yeah. And
here's what I read
to be on your show.
Here's what I read. was that originally they wanted her to write an episode of Doctor Who, and she declined. And then the plan after that was, well, let's see, you know, maybe she'll guest star on the show. And then at that point, David Tennant's like, no, that'd be stupid. Yeah, that'd be a spoof. I don't want my show to turn into, you know, kind of
well,
comedy.
Did you read the idea what they had though? I mean, it's the guy who writes the book, the series is writing a book, and he described his idea. It was a cold Edinburgh Christmas Eve, and there's J.K. walking through the snow, pursued by an Rita Skeeter style journalist. And then she's asking, what are you going to write after Harry Potter? And suddenly, boom, the space bug zaps her. That's what it says. And she's back in time. Seriously. And then they were going to have her. And then J.K.'s imagination becomes real. A world of Victorian magic replaces
me?
The... Seriously, this is what he wrote. A world of Victorian magic replaces the present-day world. The Doctor arrives and has to battle through a world of witches and wizards and wands and spells and CG wonders to reach J.K. at the heart of it all.
See, that would have been amazing.
I like the CG Wonders.
It would have been.
Yeah.
That would have been hilarious.
No.
No.
I'm so glad she said no.
It would have been fun. I don't know about amazing, book, but it would have been a lot of fun to watch.
I mean, it wouldn't have been like brilliant television, but it would have been immensely entertaining.
Well,
yeah. Whatever.
You can see why David Tennant said no.
Oh, he needs to get over himself.
No.
John, get back. I'm happy he said no. It didn't.
Why? Joe was down. Joe would have done it.
Joe wasn't down. She said no.
Oh.
No, she said no to writing an episode. She didn't say no to making an appearance in an episode.
Yes, she did.
Yes, she
why
did.
Why would she go to
Either she said no, I'm not positive. Either she said no, or it was never even brought to her. It's just something that the press made up.
Yeah. I believe if it's written in the paper, then it happens.
Yes, of course, John.
I mean, why would they bother wasting ink on lies?
Speaking of one more thing with Joe, she has been making use, and this is her personal money, but she donated a very large and substantial fund to the UK Labour Party. She donated £1 million, and because she was motivated by what she wants to do with how they're going to handle the problem of child poverty, and so there was much ado
and
in the press.
She was discouraged by the Tory Party. So.
At the risk of sounding ignorant, what's
the
Labour Party?
She got a
lot
of press over this one.
Isn't it like a Republican or a Democrat, but they have like different ways of saying it?
Yeah, the Tories is, I think, the equivalent of Republicans, and the Labour is probably the equivalent of Democrats-ish. I don't know anything about UK politics. I don't even,
What's the other one?
My fourth grade understanding. What, John?
It was the Labour Party and what else?
Tories.
The Tories?
Tories. T-O-R-Y. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So they're like the Voldemorts?
John!
No. I'm kidding.
So, but there was much ado about, Joe was either criticized or, you know, I mean, it's her money and she can just, you know, and she's never been shy. I mean, the British press is pretty, you know.
What were they criticizing in what context?
Well, because the current Prime Minister, she's good friends with the Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, and so they felt that she was doing this just to help his campaign, you know, and just kind of a show because they were having a big meeting.
Well,
you know, go ahead, Molly.
Tony Blair was from the Labour Party, and it's not, it's apparently the opposition to conservatives, and I'm reading this from Wikipedia because it's criminal of us not to explain this on our podcast, so let's pray that Wikipedia is right now.
It was
Tony Blair's party, and it has, quote-unquote, surpassed the Liberal Party as the main opposition to conservatives in the early 1920s, and then, yes, that's pretty much it. So I think it's the equivalent of Democratic Party here, whereas more answers seek to come from government initiatives as opposed to leaving money in the hands of the people who earned it, etc.
Yeah.
Fundamental difference in theology, in philosophy, in political philosophy
absolutely.
But J.K. Rowling's been very, she said that if she had a magic wand, or if she could do one thing, for a while ago when she got asked that question, she said that she would want to be Tony Blair for an hour. And then recently when she got asked by a different language publication, she said that she wants a Democrat to win the election. And this is when we didn't know whether it would be Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. So those are her views, and she is entitled to them the way all of us here are, even though we're not going to tell you who to vote for.
Exactly. Vote for Santa Claus, for all I care.
Santa Claus, what?
What?
He's a write-in this year, isn't he?
Santa Claus is a write-in? Mm-hmm. Thought you would write in Dawlish or something to him.
In our school elections, I'd always write in Santa Claus or Batman or something like that.
This week we saw a release from our friends at Scholastic. The U.S. publishers of the Harry Potter novels released a 10-year special edition of Harry Potter and Sorcerer's Stone. And it was a fabulous thing. They had a readathon where anybody could go into the Scholastic thing and read, and you could see follow it online, and they brought read cover
no
to cover. What's that?
No spoilers, please.
John Chubb.
You know what was really neat, though, if you were
wonderful.
Watching it? There was somebody who was there in her Hufflepuff! In her Hufflepuff clothes.
No idea what you're talking about.
Oh, I do!
Yeah. I wore a Hufflepuff tie. I wore a Hufflepuff tie and a Hufflepuff scarf to go read from Sorcerer's Stone.
Aww.
But I have to tell you, it was... the first one I read was something from very early on. I think it was during the Potions Master chapter. And then I got to read the end of the Mirror of Erised chapter, which made me very, very happy.
Oh, cool.
Oh, that's an awesome chapter.
Especially knowing what we know now, you know, about what Dumbledore would have seen. But... what was awesome about, you know, I went into this thinking it's going to be cute, take some pictures, whatever, and not really thinking I wouldn't read, that's silly, I'd leave it to the kids or the other fans or whatever, you know? But then it just looked like so much fun, so I got in line, and it was so, I gotta tell you, it was so nice. It was such a nice, low-key celebration, going back to the text, going back to the actual reason. It's not just about, you know, yay, Harry Potter, it's about let's all remember why we love these, but it was so unexpectedly great fun. Not that I didn't expect it to be bad, but I just didn't expect to enjoy it as much as I did.
How
long did it take to get through the book?
I don't know the time they finished. I left there around 2:30, and they were like maybe 5/6 of the way through. And they started at 8 in the morning.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, went on.
Did anybody else that we would recognize their names read anything from the book that you recognized?
Well, you know who was first out there, and this is great. The group that shall not be named from New York.
Woohoo!
Oh.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah, they were the first. They were there at 8:30 in the from 5 in the morning so that they could read from the first chapter. They all came in costume and took big pictures together, and Scholastic was, when I got there around 11, and Scholastic was still talking about it, how great it was that this whole group came out. People had
so
come
fun.
From midnight the night before so that they could read the opening, you know, the opening words. Mr. and Mrs. Dursley of number 4, Privet Drive, were proud to say they were perfectly normal. Thank you very much.
Awesome.
And yeah, it was just nice. People came in from the door, and you got, if you were in the first 100, though, I was really at like 174, you got a free book. And everybody who did it got these pins. They're like wings. They were the picture of the pin was on the news post. It's like wings, and it says celebrating 10 years of Harry, and it's like getting your Harry Potter like merit badge.
Oh,
so awesome!
You know,
cool. I want a
That's
pin.
So cool.
I got, you know.
It was so neat to watch though at home. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Please tell me how it was like to watch at home.
It was awesome because you could pick up the book, because I had pre-ordered it, and I don't know if you remember, Amazon had sent theirs out a little bit early, even though it didn't come out until the 23rd, and I got mine a little bit
stinkers.
Early. I know. So it was fun because I just was picking up the book, and then I'd look up, and then I'd see our friend Sam Freeman was there reading, too, and then our Leah Padfoot from our own staff was there, and she was wearing her Leaky concert, mm-hmm. and it was just so cool to see all these people that you'd see at the conventions and, you know, and concerts and stuff, and to see all these so many familiar faces, and it was just every one of them. I mean, there were young children that were there. There were adults, and it was just a joy to see everybody just reading the book in their own words and their own way of doing it, and it was just a really, really awesome thing, and I thought that was like a perfect way to celebrate. Go ahead.
Scholastic staff, too, did it, which I thought was cool.
Yeah. Yeah, Cheryl Red.
Cheryl Red, Arthur Red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cheryl.
Yeah, she did. It was awesome.
Was everybody cheering when she got there?
I have a hilarious
like,
video to share with you guys of Hot Cheryl. Hilarious. Uh-oh. I love in the wrap-up. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
She playing Guitar Hero?
No.
I have a video of Cheryl playing Guitar Hero.
I bet you do. All right, what else is up?
Guess what's happening July 7th, 2009. One guess.
Finally, you mean?
Yes, finally. The paperback of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows is coming out.
Yeah,
10 days
before
Half-Blood Prince. Yeah. Isn't
that... 10 days what?
10 days before the movie comes out.
That way.
You'd almost. Did they?
No, wait. From my understanding, I thought it was typically, like, standard practice to do the paperback, like, a year after the regular publication. Is that just something I just assumed on my own accord, or is that pattern?
It is standard practice, but I think because of the anniversary, they didn't want to push two book releases, and plus it's not like they're running for, you know, another book release, so they have all this time, so they might as well spread it out, you know?
Yeah, that makes
I thought
sense.
They typically don't cross-promote the books in the movies.
Well, they're not mentioning. It's not like they're saying soon to be a motion picture or, you know, anything. They're just putting it near each other, which is wise.
Yeah.
That was our plan too. With my and then things got moved.
Yeah. But you know, and too, I wonder though. I mean, does Beetle the Bard have anything to do with it too? I mean, even back then, they might have known that Joe had said to him, "You know, maybe I really wanna." Do this. So,
I'm pretty sure that they would have known way ahead of time that Joe was considering, you know, releasing it then, so they didn't want to clash the two.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Oh, well, speaking about your book, Miss Melissa, we learned a little bit more about it this week, didn't we? Yes, we did.
We did.
Well, kind of. We did. I posted on Leaky that on HarrierHistory.com, I've been updating what I call Vault 27 entries, which are extra bits that I couldn't get into the book. Now, a lot of those books have to do with my J.K. Rowling interview, which was 2 days long and is tremendous and has a lot of canon discussion in it. But
canon.
Sometimes new information, sometimes just discussion on existing canon, but none of that is in the book because this book is not about... Well, I take it back. There's a little bit of it in the book. That's not what the book is generally about, so I have all this extra information, which for a fan to be sitting on this is just completely criminal. So I started putting bits, you know, little bits of it as we go up on the website, and I think we're going to talk about this bit for... Canon Conundrum.
We are.
The Veil.
Sorry.
Yeah, right? Mm. And what, you know, for years we wondered what it meant. Why could certain characters hear different voices, have a different level of hearing the voices behind the veil? Mm. And J.K. Rowling did answer it during the interview. And you know what's so funny? I remember when she said it during the interview thinking, the fans need to know that. You know, like thinking, I must get this into the book. I must. And then I only went back to it when I was writing the book, and I tried so hard to get it in because I just thought, this is great. It's got to be in there. And once I realized that I was only doing it because of the pure fan and not recognizing the needs of the book, then I said, okay, maybe this should be cut. So it has now ended up on HarrierHistory.com.
Oh. Well,
and what is it, Sue? What is the information?
Wait, were you at Canon Conundrums?
Yeah, we should just tease it a little bit, though. I mean, we do hear a little bit more about what people, the characters were thinking about the veil, and I just think we should just.
It's so brilliantly simple too. That's what I love about it. It makes so much sense. It's just, it's eloquent.
And she says, and the way she says, she's like, that's why, just like that, you know, you're right. Oh. Like it's something that she meant to tell you 3 years ago or something, you know.
Makes you wonder how many other things are like that in her mind. Things
so
that
much.
Like are burning questions for us that she could answer. Oh, yeah, right. It's a hot dog.
So much. I asked her during that interview what was in the core of the wand, of the Elder Wand.
Yeah.
And she said, without blinking, a thestral hair. I said, well, you gotta tell people this. And she goes, I haven't told you that yet. I said, no. You know, like that. So it's that kind of thing. She just has all
give us a little taste of something else. Tease us real quick.
Of something else from the interview?
Some other candidate. Cole, come on, Melissa.
I have to pull it up.
I'm biting.
There's so much. We talked about shipping, and that stuff is in the book. We talked a lot about the epilogue. We talked.
Did she say what was in the love room?
She already answered that.
She said it on our show.
I know.
Shut my dork.
See, I wasn't around.
She
didn't
say what was in the love room. We talked about some of the epilogue stuff is actually in my epilogue, because the epilogue, as I see it, is a little bit of a breath, a little bit of a you know, relaxing moment after a full book kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I let more canon stuff get in there because you just kind of have to at some point. It's just being a fan maybe overween that a little bit. But so we talk about that there. Oh, God, there's so... You
don't have to.
You asked me to recall a 100-page document at...
Tell her about the secret of Dobby's eyes.
What?
What?
Secret of his eyes? He's got, like, magic eyes?
Yeah, he had, like, a five-minute answer to that.
Secret of Dobby's eyes? The fact that they're, like, the size of
I don't know what
ball.
He's talking about.
Yeah.
He's being...
Well, maybe
anyway,
that was from one of our conversations.
Okay. Can we get this back? My book, called Harry, A History, will be out on November 4th in the U.S., November 19th in the U.K., November 23 in Australia. Oh, and when I say U.S., I generally mean North America, so that includes Canada. Sorry, Canada. November 4th. In Canada. And we're going to be hearing about... Actually, Sue just asked if she could interview me on the show about it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is really cool.
Yeah. Got a lot to ask you, Miss Melissa.
Are you going to be an in-the-know or extendable ears?
I'm not either. I'm... I don't know.
I think that'd be an in-the-know.
Neither. No, but that's fun because we want to ditch you two jokers so that we can actually talk.
Oh! Yeah. Whatever.
Less work for me.
And from now on, every week we're going to give some sort of teaser. Probably you'll hear about it here on Pottercast, like right before I put it on HarryHistory.com.
Slash spoiler.
This is indeed Pottercast, and it's my first and best home, aside from Leaky. So, yeah.
Okay. Squee. Awesome. Can't wait. I love it. We have
one
more thing we heard some to talk on. We'll talk more about that in Canon Conundrum, but we have one more big news, and I thought this was really cool. We got to talk to Mr.
Really
David
awesome.
Heyman. I was really, really thrilled with this. He answered some questions for us, and there's something about this man. Maybe it's because he deals with the press so much more, or he's just, I don't know, just a type of person, but I just really appreciated his answers. He spoke very, I think, honestly about why they moved the film. And, you know, I mean, he blatantly, you know, he said it's called the film business, you know. And
That makes sense.
I just
Thank
the way he
you.
Approached
Somebody
it was
like adults,
you know, I mean, he just said it without any bunch of hoo-ha that I really didn't care for Mr. Horn's opinion. And I'll just say that's my personal opinion. I didn't care for his statement. And I just found it.
Who's?
Alan Horn, who's the president of Warner Brothers, issued this statement. And then, but I don't know. But Mr. Heyman just said, look, he said, you know, it's film business, and they needed they had a big year. Warner Brothers had a big year with Dark Knight, and they needed a big film for 2009, and Harry Potter filled the slot. Boom, there it is.
I mean, hallelujah, ring in the court. Like, this is what we've been asking somebody to say, to treat us like adults. We get it. It's okay.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And so you're absolutely 100% on. Any time I've heard David Heyman speak over the years, I mean, there are a few people in showbiz, and I'm not just talking about Harry Potter, I mean in show business in general, when you interview them, who ring like they are treating you like just a person who needs answers as opposed to press. And David Heyman is really high on that. Like, he'll look right at you and give you an answer that seems to be true and respectful and not at all like he's covering for something, which is so nice.
Such refreshing.
It's interesting to hear the answer of, you know, Warner Brothers had a good year, now we need to have a good year next year, and then in like the same interview maintain that we don't have two Deathly Hallows for any other than artistic reason. Not that I don't believe that. I wholly believe that, you know, they
can't be.
Decided to split the two movies because they wanted to tell the story better,
but
it must be harder for other people to believe when...
Well, it's not... I mean, it's probably a mix of both, but, like, if there was no business supporting of this artistic decision, it would have never been made.
Exactly. It's
you
just
know?
It's one of
the
those
only
things
that made good business sense was to have one film. Yeah.
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 But
that
well?
But... I just think that they were, you can argue that it was from a business point of view, but I just think that they were just genuinely trying to make as good as films as they could out of the wealth of material that was in Deathly Hallows, and which they were considering if they were just going to do one, they would have removed the Deathly Hallows to begin with.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah, wow. No.
That's insane.
Not okay. What are you going to call it? Harry Potter and the...
Harry Potter and the Last Film.
I thought I'm finding the horcruxes.
Finding the horcruxes, exactly. Harry Potter and the Deathly Horcruxes. What?
You know, I just... Yeah. When I read that, when that answer came in, your mind just boggles. Like, what? You appreciate that a film and a book are two separate entities, and they're two separate things, even though this is an adaptation. But still, it's the basic... I just
funny.
Did he tell you where they wanted to split the movies at?
No, he did not answer that question, unfortunately. But he did say that he's read the first script. He's read that, and then he has not read the second half, and that's going to...
So he knows. He knows the answer of where it splits.
Yeah.
It's funny, because it might not seem like that big of an answer to them, that big of a question to them to begin with, but of course, the first question that the fans came up with right after we learned there would be two films is, oh my god, where are they going to split it? So now it's this huge thing that they're not going to release until, you know...
Right.
Fans are going to make a big deal out of it to make a press moment out of it, you know?
Yeah. Sure. It affects the narrative so much.
It does.
What if they ended it, like, you know, right when Ron comes back and, like, the last shot is, like Ron, Harry, and Hermione going into, like, a tent, and then we have no idea what happens after that.
Sorry, John. Did we have very little reaction to that?
I don't know. You know what? I'm just happy about to learn that Dobby is going to be back in the movies, and that's all I'm happy about, because
Dobby is back!
Yay!
It almost makes me sad they're going to bring him back just to stab him through the heart.
I know. He's been making this joke, like, all month. Like, what happens? Like, what's he going to do? He's going to look into this camera and be like, oh, actually, I was on vacation for the past 4 years. I've been to the Caribbean, and I've been here, and I've been riding a camel at the
Harry's going
to
be like, who the F are you?
No.
Where have you been? You abandoned me. No, see, what they should do then, when they re-release everything, you know, like Lucas style, is like put Dobby in every other movie just randomly. Just like, you know, maybe he's nearby when Harry is summoning the Patronus and Prisoner of Azkaban, and, you know, maybe in Phoenix he's like talking to creature at some point that we don't see.
So you mean he'd be like an Easter egg on the DVDs?
Yeah, just to have him there, like, you know how they added a bunch of, like, flying, like, monsters in Star Wars, like, episodes, you know, 4 through 6.
Like,
just throw Dobby in there, just randomly.
Dobby Easter egg.
Students.
I'm so glad they're doing this right and bringing Dobby back. That's great. But did he say that Dobby would be in the first film?
He didn't really, like, specify that, I didn't think. I mean, he just said that they would, given the points of it, they needed to emphasize him now, you know? I mean, given, you know, because he was referring to when, you know, that Joe had told said that it went, so. Because he
that's
was not, if you've seen
it. Right up.
Yeah.
What about Peeves?
Said that.
You know what Dobby's going to do? They're going to give Dobby probably, no, they can't do that. And say they're going to give him grip hooks.
They'll give Dobby some sort of greater importance. Maybe he'll maybe be at the wedding or something. If they do the wedding, you know?
He's officiating the wedding. That would be great.
That'd be amazing.
Oh, stop.
I'm
so
bad.
Not to.
So, well, if we could if we could have a priest play xylophones in Mamma Mia, why not have a little house elf?
Oh, Mamma Mia! Dobby's going to have a xylophone.
Yeah, there you go. All right, I digress. Okay, Melly, I think we've done it. That's our news. That's it.
I think we've done enough. What do you think?
That's pretty good news. Well, we had to run some long news because it's been so long since we've had the news.
I know.
Yeah,
it's
been so long.
We hope you haven't snoozed. That was all the news. We'll catch you on the other side of the news. Time again for Canon Conundrums.
So, Canon Conundrums.
Canon Conundrums! What are we talking about? I'm so excited I provided a Canon Conundrums. That makes me crazy.
We still do Canon Conundrums. I love the quickfire ones we did at Terminus, though, when we had big hat of topics.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was fun.
But I'm excited about this week because we're finally pinning down something. That we
have
all
an answer
knew.
For a Canon Conundrum?
Yeah, we do have an answer. About the
veil. Wow.
The veil
we do.
Right
can
now.
I read it?
Yes.
Yeah, as part of my interview with Joe, which was mostly about the phenomenon, but with having myself and Joe Rowling in a room, there's no way we're not going to talk about canon. So we got off topic a lot and started talking about canon. And I asked her, because I had to, what about the veil. And basically, this interview is very indicative of what happens when Joe starts talking about canon. You don't really have to ask her anything. You just kind of mention something, and she just goes. And the only thing and the best thing you can do as an interviewer is just let her do it. Let her go. You know. And,
do you have a clip to play?
I, I it's too low. If I could, if the the audio would be so bad that it's just it was really hard to transcribe because it was so badly audio recorded. So because it wasn't ever for audio publication, you know. I basically, and I had three going, and of course only one worked. It's my life. Basically, J.K. Rowling made a comment, and I forget what precluded it. She said that everybody wanted to go beyond the veil. Oh, I know. I was explaining to her about the questions we had just asked everybody on tour, and how one of them was the veil, and about the veil, and who thinks we're going to go beyond the veil, and she just went, everybody wanted to go beyond the veil. So I said, you know, I have to know, a lot of fans see this veil as separation, and she immediately was off. This is what she said. It's the divide between life and death. I tried to do a nod to that in the tale of the three brothers. She was separate from them as though through a veil. Mm. You can't go back if you pass through that veil. You cannot come back. Or you can't come back in any form that will make either person happy anyway. But when they surround that veil, and she's talking about Order of the Phoenix, I was trying to show that depending on their degree of skepticism or belief about what lay beyond, because Luna, of course, is a very spiritual character. This got reprinted. It wasn't skeptical. The word was spiritual character. Luna believes firmly in an afterlife. She's very clear on that. And she feels them speaking or hears them speaking much more clearly than Harry does. This is the idea of faith. Harry thinks he can hear them. He's drawn on. But Harry has had a life that has been so imbued with death that he now has an uncharacteristically strong curiosity about the afterlife, especially for a boy 15, as he is in Phoenix. Ron's just scared, as I think Ron would be. He just knows this is something he doesn't want to dabble with. Hermione, hyper-rational Hermione, can't hear anything, get away from the veil. So, if you walk through the veil, you're dead. You're dead. What you find on the other side, well, that's the question. Do I believe you go on? Yes, I do believe you go on. I do believe in an afterlife, although I'm absolutely doubt-ridden and have always been, but there you are. I had not, this is Jonah, I had not anticipated, though I really should have done, how interested people would be beyond the veil. And lots of people, including Dan Radcliffe, wanted to go through the veil. But then that shouldn't surprise me because teenagers are very interested. I said, Dan sort of does get to go beyond the veil. He says, yes, but not literally. And on Ginny, she says, I think women are more likely to hear them than men. Ginny and Harry really are soulmates. I think she's like Harry. She's got an intellectual curiosity, and she's got something of belief. Hermione is totally rational. Let's all back away from the veil and pretend we heard nothing. So that's what I posted on HarryHistory.com, and it's been really really satisfying seeing everybody come and reacting to it.
Is she saying Hermione is an atheist?
No.
I don't think so. What do you think,
she's hyper-rational.
Seuss?
Yeah. I don't think it's a question. You know, when you say something like that, I don't believe that just because you don't, that she doesn't, Hermione's someone that likes to have the books. She likes to have that tangible kind of thing. So I don't think it's a question of being atheist. She just wants to see the reinforcement of the tangible knowledgement, something that she can hold, feel, read in her hand. So I don't know that necessarily makes her an atheist, but I just think she just wants to apply her sense of logic and thought process. Well, if you could, this is because it's there, then we know that this for a fact is this. So I don't think it's a question of atheism.
So she's like the sour kangaroo in Horton Hears a Who.
I never saw that.
If you can't see it or feel it or hear it,
but
then it doesn't exist.
I don't think at all it means that Hermione isn't... doesn't have belief, or as some said, as some people were like, well, she says Ginny has intellectual curiosity, that means that Hermione doesn't. No, that's not at all what it means. Nobody has more intellectual curiosity than Hermione, but in that moment of something unexplained happening, Hermione's instinct, her visceral reaction is, no, cannot be happening, but I think upon further reflection she might hear them.
I'd agree with that completely.
Yeah,
I would
agree.
Yeah,
I think Hermione, we need to sit down and just kind of... I think she'd be more interested... She would have to be interested in, like, the origin of the veil, how long it's been there, how to get there, and then once she kind of digests, like the... I don't know, what's in her proximity, she could, you know, would maybe, you know, like you said, hear after a while. I don't know.
John?
Maybe Hermione was just so focused on what they were supposed to be doing there at the time that, like, she doesn't want to stray her attention or risk anybody getting distracted.
That's true, because Hermione is very focused. Look at book, you know, 7. You know, she was a driving force a lot of the time.
Yeah. I wish she would have asked Joe, like, well, what happens if you tie, like, a rope to a bucket and toss it in the bucket and...
You know, why didn't we go further on this line of questioning is because I was there to interview her about the phenomenon, not about canon.
No,
canon, I could have gone 20 minutes about the veil and what happens and et cetera. But we had to get back.
Yeah, of course.
Does the sound waves travel through there?
That's a sufficient answer, because it reflects our reality. You know, there are some people who are very skeptical mm-hmm. about an afterlife, some people who fully embrace it. And it's one of those things that you can't know. And so it's just one of the things, like, if you step behind that veil, you'll know personally, but you can't communicate that knowledge to anybody else. It's just, it's a nice reflection yeah. and tie-in of how it, like, to me, like, I don't think you could answer it anymore without losing some of its beauty and nuance, because a lot of it is up to interpretation. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. What if, like, you put just your arm through?
I don't know.
Does it kill your arm?
No.
Is that what happened to Dumbledore?
I didn't get the pass through
the
veil.
Maybe you can get it back. It's that if you, yourself, your being, your whole being steps through that veil, you're done.
Exactly. That's yeah. what I would say. Like, if you stick your toe in, if you jump in the water, it doesn't mean you're in. If you put your foot in the pool, it doesn't mean you're swimming. Your foot's in the pool. Take it right out. Or, like, I don't think it's so ominous that it's going to pull you in, like, some sort of, like, Jaws type. Like, rah.
But it pulled Sirius in the movie.
He
got AK'd before he was dead. And
it kind of, like snaked outward and got him. Like, you know. Yeah, the movie. Which,
like,
if he's already dead, I can understand that. If he is already dead, even though he's still moving, then I can.
Well, I mean,
I get it.
No, but in the book,
he got AK'd, and then he looked at Harry, and then he was like, "Oh bother!"
Oh bother!
And then he fell backwards.
It's kind of like when somebody gets shot, and they look up like, "Oh, I've been shot," and they die.
Yeah. Oh no. Oh no.
Oh no. Like a Phoebe.
Can I say this? What appealed to me about this interview?
No, Sue, you can't. No, you cannot say
okay.
it. Whatever.
Fail. Cut off her mic.
I really like this about Luna it being a spiritual character and that she believes in the afterlife. And for her, it was, okay, yeah, of course, I can hear these voices. So this yeah. whole question of hearing voices and stuff it really appealed to me that Luna was like this. And that Harry, although he has been so, like she wrote, or so imbued with death and, you know, and has curiosity about it, but he's kind of hear those voices, but he's like, oh, wait a minute. And Ron, he's just like, no. You know, so for me, that was more appealing to me about, it talks to me, more reflective about how our personalities and what we each bring to the table when we confront these things. Because death is the great unknown, as Dumbledore says. But we each have our own yeah. personal beliefs. And I really like the way that she had each of these characters reacting differently to it and all the different ways that people are in real life about it. Because, like, when you say that Hermione's an atheist, just because she believes in seeing things factually doesn't mean that she cannot believe in God, too. Just, you know, and so for me, that Luna unquestionably said, oh, yeah, okay. You know, it just, I don't know, it was... For me, it was reassuring. No. I mean, I knew this about the characters, but for Joe to say it specifically like that was really kind of gratifying for me.
And, you know, somebody said that in the comments, Sue, and I pulled this out on the site as well because I'm trying to, like, do some canon discussion there as well. And somebody said he signed it off as H. Said, interesting about Hermione. Yes, we all know that she's logical to the last, but I think I felt in Deathly Hallows that she had something of faith, or whatever you will call it, but that she struggled. She believes in the lasting soul, and she knows the verse on James and Lily's grave. She was scared of pulling back the dead. Which is interesting. Mm. And you can't, and no matter what, I mean, she must believe Harry when he says that I went to a place where I spoke to Dumbledore and I saw what Voldemort will become when he dies. Like, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a good point.
She's not going to, that's rational. I mean, the eyewitness from Harry to her is rational, I would imagine. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I wonder if there's a little bit of fear, too, in her. You know, it's something that she was afraid of, that unknown, you know, that said her, okay, my logic must kick in, I must protect.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing because, yeah it's one of those things that she can't really tackle it the normal way, so there's the uncomfortable, like, wow, I can't really handle this how I normally do,
I mean,
and, like, yeah, it's a big question, the whole unknown. And,
she just doesn't do well with that kind of stuff, like, just like how the disdain she had for divination.
Crawling through the veil.
And earlier in the books.
Yeah.
Whenever you know, take things that are proven
soul is as dry
factually
as the things that she
away.
To, or something like that.
My first. I thought it was interesting that the veil is introduced in the same book as Thestrals are introduced, having to do with death and people who are, you know, who know death. Are able to see or hear different things than the people who haven't. And I thought that it was related to the Thestrals and that, you know, Harry could hear things, and, you know, Ginny could hear things, I guess, Luna could hear things, because they've known death differently than the others. But then it was inconsistent, because it was also, you know, whenever people are separated off into who can feel something, who can hear something, like in the train in Azkaban, when, you know, Harry reacts strongly, and Ginny also reacts, but then the others react differently. It's like, why? And there's different reasons for the powers of the Dementors, the Thestrals, and now the Veil. So it's interesting that they're so different,
mm-hmm.
that the Veil is more of a faith-based rather than a who's more familiar with death or evil. And that's it's not a faith-based thing. It's very, you know, straightforward for the Thestrals.
Well, I think,
but
I
thought it was related more to a Thestral philosophy than a faith-based philosophy.
I think people mm-hmm. who I don't really remember my first that scene was so, like, the ministry scene was just like so high-paced, and like it was just a great,
oh yeah,
you know, a great read. And so I didn't really give it, like, just the proper dissection of it, but, like, in hindsight, it's one of those things that it didn't add up. But now, when you like, you know, this is like a faith based quote unquote thing, it's just people who deal with death at an early age or who've dealt with this, they ask themselves these questions sooner so they can deal with it. Like Ron, he came from a very, you know, sheltered life. You know, like, the fact that he doesn't have money is one thing, but, you know, he had a wonderful home life and, you know, parents who loved him, brothers and sisters that he got along with and had, like, the, you know, he had the opportunity to fight with. You know, he had a very nice, you know, childhood. So these ideas to him are very foreign. So, of course, he's going to be afraid of them. He doesn't want to think about that because he has so many people that he loves and cares for that death is even that much more scary for him. Like Harry...
Yeah,
he grew up with it. You know, it's just one of those things that, like, it's always been in the corner of the room, and so he doesn't want to address it, but it's not freaking him out because it's always been there. And Luna, you know, her mom died. Hermione, I think she's in the same boat as Ron a little bit, because, like, she came from, you know, so she doesn't understand it, and she can't really have never experienced it before. And, like, maybe Ginny, yeah. she can just tackle it in a different way than Ron. And like I guess the whole. When Joe said that women might be more prone to hear it. I don't know. That's my first instinct, I guess. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
I just was wondering, though, if, like, people like Lucius Malfoy and them, all those guys that were fighting, you know, if they even got, if they could hear it. Yeah, I don't know. Just because I'm a squirrel, it was not important.
No, I think that makes sense. For me, I think that it's just as much as, because it's I think it's a reflection on death. And giving the nature of what they were doing in that room, I don't think they had the time to really reflect upon it. You know what I mean? Like, they're not in the right state of mind, really, to receive from it, I would say. I don't know. If they can't hear it, that's what I would argue. But
can I ask you this question? And this kind of bothered me. I don't know if you want to talk about this, but at the end there, she said women are more likely than men to hear.
Yeah, what's that all about?
I don't think she's saying... Well, a lot of people are, well, men don't have intuition. I don't think she's saying that's entirely her intent or that it's possible, but that's what she thinks. And I think to a certain extent she's right. If you were to straw poll, I think you'd find a lot more women believe in the beyond than men do. I don't know if that's... I mean, does that strike true to you guys?
I don't know. I've never seen any actual survey on that.
That, to me, it would make sense, just because...
I mean,
like, I don't know. Like, I grew up, I got, you know.
Which parent was the one that pushed the family more towards going to church?
Oh, that was
that's
Simpsons,
not a
definitely
measure. That's not a measure.
Yeah. Well,
that's the
measure
of which parent feels like we should follow the traditions. Which,
well,
I can,
it depends
see
on
many...
how you view church, mm-hmm. because some people it is about the structure of the religion and the bureaucracy of it. But then, like. Me, I grew up going to church, and it was a much more spiritual thing, and it's much more of a personal relationship than it is following these sets of traditions. And for that, mm-hmm. given the like, it is more common that you do see a lot more women involved than men. But then at the same time, there's other factors that play into that, but I can see why she says that, not to... I'm being careful not to make a huge sweeping statement. You know what I mean? But I could... Basically, yeah. I can agree with it, even though it's kind of like, it's not something you can... It's not something you can just say without... Right. I don't
well,
know.
Again,
I'm not
it's
making
her opinion.
Any sense.
You know... She's not giving a, like, in Harry Potter, more females are... No, she's saying, well, this is what I think.
Exactly, no, yeah. And I can see some merit to that statement. That's all I'm saying. But yeah, it's one of those things you can't make assumptions on it.
No. It's kind of like put it down to women's intuition kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's just an intuitiveness.
Or being like she described, here at Harry at his point... You know, in his life, and he had heard them a little bit. He thought, but he was uncertain. Whereas Ron, no, you know, it just wasn't. Well, so I just think it has to do with the person more so, and maybe it's because the way I don't know the intuitiveness being around.
I agree. And then going back to just like the whole men women thing, like men, our minds are they work differently, and so like men are women are much more capable at processing multiple things at one time. Guys are more tunnel, like one thing at a task oriented, like one thing at a time. And because women's brains can handle women's. Wow, I'm smart. You guys can handle like processing different things at once. You're more of abstract thinkers, and so you're more the intuition thing is more of a like because you're putting two and two together. You know what I mean? You don't have like a tunnel vision like. Men can. This is a broad statement, and but it is one of those things. So I think that's a lot where it comes from too. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, we're also talking about people at this phase of their life. After Fred dies, do you think Ron would have more of a chance of hearing the whispers? Because maybe he'd want to.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Very good point.
It's you know, Harry's. My initial reaction to all this was that it was how close the person had brushed with death. Ginny came very close. Harry has come close many times. You know, Luna has seen it. Luna just, she just knows. Neville, can Neville see thestrals? I forgot.
Yeah, he saw his grandpa die.
That's right. He saw somebody die. So that was always for me the wrench. Like why didn't Neville hear them? But I think at this point, again. Neville has his parents.
Guy.
A terrible thing has happened to him, but he's not. It's not really death that imbues his life.
Well, I think that's a good way too, because just if you think about it, in like, if people who experience death in their life, they're going to be more prone to think about it. So I think that's reflected in the story. The fact that you know Ginny did come very close to death, so of course she's going to be more curious about it. You know what I mean? I think that's very true. Yeah.
You know, and this is really interesting about Neville because, I mean, what he saw was a form of death. What was done to his parents was a monstrous thing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and, I don't know, I think maybe he would have been too afraid to admit it or say anything. I don't know. You know, speaking of someone who identifies with Neville, I think maybe I would have said I would be afraid to admit, oh, I heard something, but I don't want to say anything, you know, because people think I'm more freaky than normal. You know, I don't know.
See, I said on the site that I think that Neville, just in that moment, wouldn't be worried. But if he wasn't in danger and he was alone with the Veil and like, had time to sit and sort it out, then he would. And especially after the Battle of Hogwarts, I mean, think about it. Almost everybody now at Hogwarts can see Thestrals.
Oh, God, yeah. I wonder if they still would use the Thestrals after that year to take the carriages to the school
kind
and back.
Kind of takes the mystery away, huh?
Yeah.
Exactly, you know.
Yeah.
You think maybe they'd employ, like, unicorns or something fun instead, just to lighten the mood.
But you wonder why they even chose those to begin with, just because they happen to be inhabited in the forest? I mean, what? I don't know.
It is so, like, gothic.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Exactly what it is.
It's like, hey, the time for a new school. Let's mess with all the people who can see death.
Well, it's disrespectful to all the people who died protecting Hogwarts. It's like, you wouldn't get rid of that. It's just a memory for them. It's, you know, it's a thing of honor.
I mean, at peacetime, nobody... In peacetime, I mean, when those kids go at the in the epilogue, I remember thinking, my God, almost none of these kids throughout their entire life are going to see these Thestrals. I mean, throughout their entire time at Hogwarts, whereas so many during Harry's time, having like five or six in a class with half
their remember they have to see death. Not it can't be like their parents died. They have to be there when it died. So I don't know.
Right.
I think it's probably the ratio is probably the same.
Yeah.
Well, after the Battle of Hogwarts.
Oh yeah, Hogwarts.
Many people saw
yeah.
death. You know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah. Like, but even then, in Harry's time, a lot of people did. I mean, who knows? The older kids probably very much so. Probably a lot of them were around during the war.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. The Thestrals.
Say it, John. Do it.
Well, the.
They're called Thestrals.
Thank you.
Well, the seventh years take the boats back after school.
Yes, that was a great question.
According to your theory, which
okay. was confirmed as sounding quite plausible.
Right. Oh, they take the boats back? Forgot about that.
Yeah, you didn't hear that part?
I remember now.
Our interview with Joe? Yeah. That would have been a beautiful idea.
So bad. Oh, I love these tidbits, Melissa. I want them all the time. I want everything.
Hold on, another one.
Tease
us for one next week.
Let's call
Give
them
like a little
wee little Joe bits.
Okay, so guys, next week I'm going to put on podcast and then followed by putting it on the site some conversation about the epilogue and her choice to leave Harry alive and her choice to bring Harry back to the Wizarding World.
Awesome.
Sweet.
That's brilliant.
Awesome.
Yes.
The end of the show.
The end of the show.
But only for this week.
Only for this week? I thought it was like the end.
We're not ending, we're not changing, we're not going less often, we're not doing anything like that. Crazy talk.
Aw.
Yeah.
So wait, Melissa had a question about your book. Multiple questions. What is the deal? You're not driving a Porsche in your book, is this right? I mean...
That's
what?
Funny. Amazon.co.uk put like... a weird image. It must have been off somebody's hard drive, or maybe they put the wrong, but I don't know. But for a while, like, you went to amazon.co.uk and there was a picture of a Porsche in the book cover space.
Cool.
It was really funny. I don't understand what happened there, but yeah, no.
Maybe it was representing a pre-order sales.
Yes. I'm sure. No.
Yeah.
No, nothing like that.
No.
Wait,
yeah,
so
that was a lot of fun.
Are you getting a new cover though? I mean, are they going to put different translations going to get different covers, or what's?
I didn't think there was going to be. There's definitely probably. I'm making a lot of sense. Definitely probably. Almost 100% will be a different cover for Australia because that's a whole different publisher. Simon & Schuster Pocket is also publishing it in the UK, so I thought it would be the same thing, but to go with more of the mood of the market over there, they've changed it just a little bit, but it's really cool. And as soon as I have that, I will put it up. I don't know if I can make it public yet.
Okay.
Cool. That sounds cool.
Yeah, it is. It's just a little bit more whimsical than I love them both equally for different
I think
reasons,
that so sounds
are
awesome.
Are there owls and pixies and like
not owls and pixies and scarves and candlesticks and twilight and books and you know everything. No.
Quills and potion masters.
No. But yeah, it's so funny. You know, my book comes out on Election Day.
Yeah.
So my agent's been wink wink joking that we should beat Barack Obama in book sales that week.
Yeah. So, that would be awesome.
I love him, and I'm gonna say it right here. He's my guy. He's the one I'm supporting. But he can have the White House. I'll take the.
You want the books?
I'll take the books. You can get the White House. We're both happy.
That's so generous.
Yeah, you know how it is. No, but seriously, go pre-order because that's if you pre-order it helps for that first week. So.
Cool.
Very cool.
John's gonna pre-order 600,000.
Yeah, with your credit card.
Thanks.
Have a balance out.
That'll be a story. Author buys all her books, makes bestsellers.
I'm sure that's been done. You know,
it
sure
you know it has.
That
people have organized, like especially. Religious groups and especially political groups have organized to all purchase on the same day so that you can propel it. Because it doesn't, honestly, it only takes a couple of thousand concentrated purchases. The New York Times bestseller list is chosen by surveying, I think, 40,000 retailers, wholesalers, online markets. They kind of sample, and they don't just go by numbers. They ask the people in the stores, what are people coming in and asking for? What are they buying?
Wow.
So go to your store and buy it, order it online, and then... That in that first week, and then yeah.
Didn't Lord Mallory organize like a huge buy-up of like Half-Blood Prince just to burn it, and like ended up contributing to its seller numbers like considerably?
That's the funny thing about burning. If you're burning a book, you probably already bought it. So
yeah, I don't get that.
Really, who's a fool?
What if you can't when like you stole a book and then you burnt it?
Speaking of burning of books,
Yes.
Okay.
What this so, is Banned Books Week.
Yes, it is.
Aww.
Yes, it is. So if you would like to contribute to the cause of having books not burn, go to ALA.org, look at the list of their banned books.
Go where?
ALA.org, it's the American Library Association. It's their Banned Book Week. It's celebrating our right to read things, even when people say we shouldn't. So go pick out one of their books, whether it's Harry Potter or Catcher in the Rye or something by Maya Angelou.
Yes.
You know, read, buy it, celebrate it, promote it to your friends, get on your YouTube channel and read a portion of it in celebration, just not a lot of it because then you're breaking copyright. And, you know, go and spread the word about books that are usually banned.
Isn't that like spread chaos and disorganized society and all those other bad things?
You sound like the Joker. No, no.
He's being facetious.
This is Banned Book Weeks.
Oh, I'm just messing.
Yeah. So what's your favorite banned book?
Besides that, actually, I'm a big fan of Maya Angelou. I know why Caged Bird Sing. I think it's... And seriously, Inherit the Wind. And anything by Harper Lee. I mean, these are magnificent novels. It floors me that they would be banned, but they are. You know, I just can't understand it.
I think we've asked this question like the last couple banned books weeks.
Yeah.
What people's favorite banned books were.
Is yours Judy Blume, John?
I think it was last year. I think now it's graduated to Everybody Poops.
What?
Don't please no. Please, no.
Okay. I'm getting
it has been banned in some schools.
Amazing. All right.
What about you, Frankie? What's yours?
I don't know, because I'm probably not as well-read as most people think I am. So, I would have to look at a list. Let me look this up.
Well,
I will guarantee for you that there is a book that you have read that is on one of these lists. Yeah, it's Where's Waldo?
Shut up. Oh, come on.
I swear, it's on the list. Number 88, Where's Waldo?
That's ridiculous.
People are ridiculous.
Waldo. Crazy. Waldo's dangerous to our brains. I don't know.
He keeps hiding. It's not healthy.
Yeah.
Where is he?
I can see the optometrists being against that book. It totally makes your eyes buggy, but, you know, it's funny. So, yes, read banned books.
Okay, what's this video, Cheryl, you mentioned in the intro?
Oh, hold on.
What is it?
Go to the username straight 2008, STRAIGHT 2008, and there's a video. It's James Cheryl's boyfriend's channel, and he's got like all her videos.
Wait, say that again.
And he,
what's the username?
Straight 2008.
Okay.
And there's a video called "There You Go, Girl," and he got her basically to he has a green screen, and he got her to walk up and down by the green screen because he said he was just testing it or whatever, and then he did something with it for her birthday, and you should go check it out.
I'm watching it right now.
Oh my god, I'm watching it, Cheryl.
I need to load it up.
I love her so much.
Oh, Cheryl Klein? How did he do that?
James met him and asked him to do whatever in front of a green screen, and then Cheryl also walked for him in front of a green screen. She thought he was just testing it out.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And then he put
the
video together.
She,
Belly,
you're dead.
I can't help it. She just had her 30th birthday. I have to...
Oh, it's going to get so many hits now.
I know.
I should put it on my blog.
You're gonna kill me. Oh my god. I love it.
Hot Cheryl travels far.
Yes.
Oh god.
Okay, guys. I think it's time to get out of here.
It's been a great long week.
Escape while we can.
I'm so glad I remembered to ask you.
Yeah. Tune in next week for another live show.
Yes, totally.
Podcast live from somewhere.
Until then.
So then, boys and gals, keep twiddling those dials.
The next password will be Harry-a History.
Keep each other safe.
Keep faith.
Good night. We've missed it.
Dobby is free.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
This week's podcast was produced by the Podcast Trio and Steve Bonnet. Thanks, as always, to our awesome transcription elves for transcribing this and all our other episodes on podcast.com. For more information about the show and how to contact us and be a part of future episodes, visit podcast.com.
During her reading. No, I'm teasing.